Tony, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Fine, thanks for having me on again, Richie.
Not too bad, you arrived. Good, you're here, present and correct. Tony Gosling, folks, BBC, former BBC journalist and presenter of the Not the BCFM Politics Show in Bristol. I hope you had a good holiday, pal. Welcome back. So Grant Shapps, the current Defence Secretary, that's vaudeville, by the way. He's had 17 cabinet posts. I mean, well, he hasn't had 17, he's had a few. He's recommending that some UK troops are sent to help train Ukrainians. And he says this at the same time his predecessor, Ben Wallace, has written in the Telegraph today saying that he asked Rishi Sunak to send more than £2 billion to the Ukrainian war effort, bearing in mind, as far as I understand it, Tony, the UK has already sent over £4 billion to the Ukrainian war effort. What's going on, pal? What's happening here?
Well, this is the sort of dying death throes of the Tory administration, isn't it? And it's almost as if they're handing the country over to Starmer for 2024. I mean, the idea that Shapps could be put in this important job it's Monty Python. I mean, this guy has got no real knowledge whatsoever of the defence. He's got no knowledge of the military. Maybe that's the whole point of putting him in that job. And the irony of all of this is Britain does seem to be, through decisions like this that we heard the other day, where they're saying, you know, we want to send troops and openly send troops into train. What they used to say in the old days, I remember even during the Vietnam days, is special advisors are being sent. You know, this is soldiers to train them. And if they can't use the equipment that we're giving them, they will use it for them. And so this is going to get more British soldiers killed by Russians, don't doubt. And the Russians are now, going to be deliberately, and in fact they have been doing this already, targeting NATO personnel in the country. They know where they are, they're watching them, they're listening electronically to where they are, and so they're making sure that Britain and... I mean, what it says to me...
Hang on a second, Tony. If British troops are training Ukrainian troops, they're unlikely to be doing that near the front line or in harm's way. So it's very unlikely they're going to be killed, I would argue.
Well, there was. I can't remember the name of the city, but there was a couple of months ago an attack on a pizza restaurant, which was where NATO personnel were in the pizza restaurant in Ukraine. I mean, this is a sort of open secret, really, that some of the senior people, not just ordinary squaddies doing the training, are over there, you know, as a liaison between the ever diminishing Ukrainian ground forces and the ever diminishing supply of new people who just simply know that they don't want to die at the hands of the Russians. They don't even necessarily believe in Zelensky and what he stands for anymore. And that we've been over there making sure that the communications between the American satellites, the British and American weapon systems, and the few remaining Ukrainian soldiers is all working swimmingly. So, I mean, it's another proxy war. It's very much like, you know, sending ISIS in for Syria. The idea is that nobody is supposed to know that this is our army. And, of course, the Russians know very well. They don't want to pick any fights. And that's one of the reasons, this announcement by Shapps, no doubt, is that one of the reasons why yesterday we saw the Russians announce a massive national nuclear weapons drill for the public, for the population. So they're saying if there is a threat of nuclear attack, we want everyone to be ready. We want everyone to be in bunkers and God knows what. And the Russians and the Chinese will take this seriously. They will protect their population. Whereas the West, when we got rid of the Civil Defence Act, I'm thinking about back in, it was around about, I think it was 94, 95, 96, around about that time, and replaced it with the Civil Contingencies Act. I got a kind of shiver down my spine seeing this change, because it was quite clear that the new arrangement wasn't going to be protecting the British public at all in a nuclear war. It was going to be protecting the existing administration, that is to say, you know, the leaders of Bristol City Council, maybe the regional seat of government and Westminster and the existing top power structure. But they weren't going to be making any measures to protect the public from a potential nuclear war or any other kind of war. So this is where we are. The Chinese and the Russians protect their public. They take this seriously. The British and the NATO countries simply don't anymore. And so, you know, I'm bewildered as you are, but in a way, this does make a lot of sense that there would be a move in order to, you know, this seems to me is where it's the scales are falling from people's eyes. They've seen the Tories in power now since 2010. That's 13 years of absolute misery, slowly but surely. You know, the complete mismanagement of the economy for the vast majority, and the enormous boosting of the super rich, the falling apart of our infrastructure, especially since 2008. And the taking away of all the money from local authorities to what used to be called the rate support grant, so that the local authorities are collapsing, social services are collapsing, youth services, everything is collapsing. And so there needs to be some sort of change to make it look as if you can vote for something which might change things.
And it won't. Can I just take issue with something you said a moment ago? You said the Chinese and the Russians. You hinted that they care more for their people, or are more interested in protecting their people. I would argue the opposite is true. China is about one of the most controlled places on Earth. It's a terrible place to live, number one. Number two, what has Vladimir Putin ever done except that which was good for his oligarchical friends and his billionaire mates? Right, it's no better in Russia either.
Let's address those one by one. First of all, the Chinese people protect their population precisely because that population is controlled, and it's precisely because the people are actually doing what the leadership want most of the time, you know, being very productive, etc. And it's a fairly supine, I mean, you know, if there are protests, they get put down pretty ruthlessly, population. So this is the quid pro quo you're getting during, you know, in a Chinese Communist Party led dictatorship, is you're going to get the protection from the dictator, from the Pope, as he is. I mean, he wants everyone to believe in him, effectively. And if you don't, if you say anything against him, you go to jail. If you laugh during the national anthem, you go to jail. But that, you know, the quid pro quo is there. He wants, you know, a very, very, you know, healthy, strong population, which will do as it's told where and when necessary.
Lovely place to live. Imagine what you're just describing there. And it sounds to me that the people really pulling the strings in the UK and Ireland and Europe, they must be very envious of the way things are in China, where people don't have free access to media, where they're as controlled as they are in China. I mean, there's a great irony here.
Yeah, or maybe they aren't even in the UK. Maybe they are in Beijing. Maybe they're in Shanghai, the people pulling the strings in the UK. You know, I look at the policies that are being implemented here, and I think this doesn't benefit anybody except the big rising superpower. Look, you asked also about Putin. He's got massive support, Richie, in his country. When there's an election next year, the United Russia Party is going to win again, because look at his approval rating. It's enormous. And
you believe the Russian media? Are you telling me that you believe those approval rating numbers?
Hang on. If we heard our own government saying, right, there's going to be a nuclear war drill, we're going to make sure that there's plenty of bunkers around for everyone to run into if there's a nuclear war, well, at least we're going to give you a chance to survive it. No, but they are doing that in Russia, and they are doing that in China. So, you know, that's the big difference, is our leadership don't seem to give a damn about this, whereas theirs do. And I would also say something about King Charles the other day. You know, when he was in France last week, yes, the week before maybe, giving his speech, where he gave this most idiotic, I mean, really a misreading of history, which explains a lot about this whole Nazi-gate business in the Canadian Parliament. If Charles is there saying in the French Parliament, well, the Germans and the French and the British, the British and the French got together and we defeated the Nazis. He's just written the whole of the, you know, the 30 million Russians that died defeating Hitler out of history. And this is one of the reasons, I think, why we get this idiotic reaction in Canada with all these people, these idiotic, useless MPs who don't know anything about history and think that, you know, maybe that the British and the Russians weren't even involved in the Second World War, cheering on this sergeant from the Waffen-SS. And by the way, I'm standing in Weston-super-Mare at the moment, which is quite close to where that story started. It was a guy called Warren Thornton that dug out the information about this guy's service record that got the Speaker of the Canadian Parliament sacked last week, and Trudeau having to make this embarrassing. And I think this has had massive ramifications amongst the Canadian population. It's like, you know, the idea that you've got this big round of applause for the Waffen-SS in the middle of the Canadian Parliament, when all those tens of thousands of Canadians died in the Second World War fighting people like him, I don't think Trudeau has a chance politically in the future. I think that's the sort of mistake, embarrassment, etc., which can completely kill an individual politician and make them totally toxic. Like somebody like Nicola Sturgeon became in up in Scotland, and they realised, and also of course like somebody like Boris potentially become so toxic that the party will not back them and they just move them out. So I don't think we'll be seeing much of Trudeau in any elections in Canada.
Maybe not. Well, they're moved on, I believe. This is my opinion and my opinion only. Those who anoint prime ministers, those who anoint presidents, they move them on when they feel they've outlived their usefulness, don't they? I mean, we've got to imagine that it's not a stretch of the imagination that when you get to such a lofty position, there are going to be filing cabinets full of information on you that you won't like. You know, and when your time is up, it's a case of, right, open a file, let's get rid of him, put somebody else in.
Well,
I
would love someone to really look into Starmer's file.
I was just going to mention it. Just going to mention it. That was my next question.
He is one of the most toxic. The thing is, the reason that the press hasn't been putting this on front pages week after week, day after day, is because he's their little puppy.
He's the heir apparent, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they won't talk. They won't diss him because, you know. By the way, all this stuff about Russell Brand. I know you wanted to have a chat with me about that last week, but I would say one thing about that, and that is, it's shown to me just how ineffective the legacy media, you know, the Channel 4 is now, because his ratings. I mean, okay, so his monetization may have gone, but his ratings are up higher and higher. In fact, they've got the mainstream press coming on there trying desperately on the BBC last week. They had Kath Viner from The Guardian and Katie Razzle, who's the BBC's media editor, saying, oh, what are we going to do about Rumble? You know, they are in panic mode because they realise that by having this smear campaign and the hatchet job on Russell Brand, it's totally backfired on them. And Russell's got even more followers now.
Now, on that, let's stay with that. The online safety, but I'm not going to argue with you about Russell Brand's character because there's no point. Because anything I say will just be my opinion, and my opinion doesn't really matter on Russell Brand. So forget him per se.
He's been good on COVID. He was very good on COVID.
Yeah, but I mean, did he say anything original? Did he say anything that hadn't been said by other more prominent people? Yeah. But anyway, but the whole point here is Rumble, isn't it? And the idea that with the online safety bill, becoming law when Charlie decides to sign the whichever parchment they put in front of him. Ofcom will then have the power to remove Rumble from our... Well, I mean, people say you can use a VPN, but I'm not sure about that. But they might say, right, Rumble is banned just in the same way that RT.com was banned. So maybe there's a far deeper story going on than just Russell Brand. Maybe Russell Brand is being used by those who want to stifle and stymie free speech, not because Russell Brand himself, per se, is any threat to the establishment, because he isn't, but that other people are, medical people, and they go on Rumble as well. What do you think? Do you think it's likely that Ofcom will try and get Rumble, kick it into the long grass and ban it in a few months?
Well, of course. I mean, we're looking at a time now, which is, I mean, I think we've really got to make the most of the internet whilst it's still there, because with the online safety bill, this is going to mean, and I'm on a committee at the Journalists Union, the New Media Industrial Council, which has been chatting about this for the last 4 or 5 years and various iterations of this bill. And to begin with, there was a lot of enthusiasm for it, saying protecting people who are being bullied online. But this has all kind of fallen away now, because we've realised that what they're actually doing is trying to have an unelected appointee committee policing the internet and saying what's true and what isn't, what is damaging, what's dangerous, who is hurt by what, you know, and saying that this sort of information is false and this isn't. And this is not the job of Ofcom. Like, if something can be proven absolutely rigidly to be totally untrue, then still people should be allowed to print it and publish it. I think when it comes to incitement to crime, that is irresponsible for publishers to do it, and that should be dealt with by maybe the police, but certainly not by Ofcom. I don't actually think we need anything like Ofcom right now. What we need is police that, for example, prosecute people that peddle child pornography online, which they don't seem to be capable of doing. We know the whole thing about cybercrime, that's what it's really about. But I don't think we even need... I mean, by the way, of course, I mean, people may not realise, I think it was 2017, Bilderberg, Ofcom were there, being entertained by Henry Kissinger, by Alex Karp, you know, the Palantir guy, who's been involved in developing this software that they're now using to use AI to target Russians and kill them with missiles, all AI missiles and drones and God knows what, over in Ukraine. And so this is Ofcom. And for them sitting down with these Bilderberg-y types and having lunch with them and not saying anything about the meeting that they're going to, tells me exactly what they're about, which is this is another kind of Mariana Spring operation where they're realising that the legacy media isn't being believed anymore. And so all the people that are embarrassing them, showing what lies they're telling on the BBC and Channel 4, they're now trying to come along and shut them down too.
And the problem is, I don't easily see how this can be prevented, how we can prevent them doing that, you know? Like, if they decide,
well,
Tony...
It's a good question. Yeah. I don't know that they will succeed, though, because, I mean, it's a bit like this business of...
Well, can I give you an example before you tell me that? Let me give you an example. Hang on, I'm not finished my question. No, I'm not finished. Hang on, this is important. I give you loads of time, I don't interrupt. Hang on. This is very important. So you present the Not the BCFM Politics show out of Bristol Fridays at 5 o'clock. It's excellent. So you're talking about things with very interesting people, which third parties might not like. Now, with the online safety bill becoming law, what's to stop Ofcom approaching a streaming service and saying, you shouldn't be streaming the Not the BCFM Politics show? Because although some of the things that are being said or all of the things might be legal, they are potentially harmful. And then you find yourself with a streaming provider. This is deadly serious. I think this is where it's going. Forget about Rumble. They'll go after the streaming providers. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think they will. And that's the whole point of it. So what can we do about it? I mean, I just look at this whole situation with the Canadian Parliament and the absolutely vile. I mean, I saw a list of the atrocities committed by the division that this guy that they applauded last week was a sergeant in. And I mean, you're talking about massacres of civilians in 1943, 1944. I mean, absolutely, literally every kind of horrific public executions, all this kind of stuff is what they were up to. And, you know, this isn't just an army unit. This is very much like the Israelis, I might say, the Israeli Defense Force, where you've got armed soldiers, not attacking other and killing other armed soldiers in tanks or in trenches, but just going through cities and towns, killing civilians, singling out individuals they don't like the look of and hanging them. This kind of thing is what they were up to.
Bizarre, yeah.
And you know, there was an attempt there. Isn't it interesting, isn't it, what's going on over there? They wanted to have Zelensky and Trudeau clapping this guy, giving him a standing ovation, and they were daring the rest of the world's press to say anything and to even know what they'd just done. And you know what happens is the information gets out anyway. And once the Jewish lobby got hold of it over in Canada, they were just throwing it straight at Trudeau, which is brilliant to see. But I don't know if you can ever really keep 100% a lid on the truth, Richie. They can try, they can legislate their way towards this sort of thing, but there's always going to be someone somewhere who's found a way through the firewall or whatever. I mean, I remember as a teenager reading William Gibson and all his stuff about the future battle of information and the internet to come.
The cyberpunk
thing.
Was that him, the cyberpunk guy?
Cyberpunk stuff.
Yeah,
and that's where we are. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can win. I mean, what's happened is that the West knows that it's going to lose militarily against the Russians and the Chinese. So it's trying everything else, you know, hybrid warfare. But at the end of the day, they have to actually fight. And they cannot fight the Russians and the Chinese and keep their own people bamboozled. And what this has proved with the Russell Brand business is that the general population just doesn't take what Channel 4 says seriously anymore. They don't take what the BBC says seriously anymore. In fact, if you look at the surveys around the world, the UK is one of the least trusted mass medias in the world.
That's right.
So we have come right down to the bottom. And so they are basically fighting. They are fighting a rearguard. I mean, I sometimes think we are fighting a rearguard, actually. Actually, they are.
Yeah. You must have giggled like a schoolgirl when you learned that Mariana Spring had been caught out lying on her CV. You couldn't make it up, could you? I actually laughed for 20 minutes. I'm like, you're kidding me, really.
It is. Look, I mean,
Witch
we
Finder
know
General.
That people are lying. This is just evidence. I mean, I remember one of the worst things I saw the BBC ever do was that news round in 2020 where they had that vile woman come onto news round, the chief scientific advisor to Nicola Sturgeon, telling all the kids watching, oh, it's all completely safe. The vaccine is all completely safe. Don't worry about it. This was early 2021, actually.
Yeah.
And you just think you're a lying, using the television to lie to kids. And, you know, so this sort of thing has its repercussions. And I was asked recently by one of the TV channels about, I was having a debate with George Samueli. I don't know if you know, he's a fascinating guy from Prague, very good international analyst, quite a droll sense of humour, about whether this is the legacy of 9/11, because I don't know if you know about the news from last week, which was Matt Campbell's won his right from the Attorney General to potentially reopen his brother's inquest. He died in the 9/11 attack.
Yeah, he's a great guy, Matt, yeah.
Was amazing guy. And it's lovely to hear good news, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Thanks for change. Maybe it's because this government's on the way out. They think, oh, we may as well now. But the point being, the discussion we were having was, have the Americans paid a price for 9/11? Well, George was saying, no, he doesn't think they have now. You know, they can bomb the Nord Stream pipeline with no consequence. Well, look, okay, so they can get away
allegedly
with these things at the highest level. Well, of course they did. And it was Jake Sullivan, by the way, who was at the Bilderberg just a few weeks before it happened, by the way, with all the other people who were the key decision makers in that Nord Stream pipeline operation that Seymour Hersh, sorry, Hersh exposed. But I think the Americans have paid a massive price in terms of international credibility, and you may not be able to register it on a, you know, any kind of actual scale of achievements or non-achievements or wars or people who've been killed or not, but they're just, people just do not trust the Yanks anymore at all. And that's why. And in the old days, they used to think that the Americans were a reasonable force for good in the world. Now nobody trusts them. So they really are honestly on a hiding to nothing. And the further they go down this road, the more trouble they're going to make for themselves. It seems obvious to me that, you know, that, and we've now got King Charles in charge here, who's an absolute, you know, he's one of the worst people you could possibly have in charge. You look at, he would most definitely have been involved, Richie, in this decision with Grant Shapps to announce the stuff to do with British troops, because he is the commander-in-chief of the British troops. He is the head of the army, and he's also the head of all the three intelligence services. So he is definitely going to have been behind that. He won't want to talk about that to his friends who follow his little spidery letters, but that's, he is most definitely one of the people who's involved in that decision to make that announcement, saying that more British troops are going to be going over to...
Allegedly. Has he said anything on Ukraine since he's taken the throne?
Well, other than Putin is the new Hitler.
Has he said that?
He said a few years ago. Yeah, he said this a few years ago. Putin is... He has most definitely compared Putin to Hitler. And that was very embarrassing, because, of course, it doesn't make for very good... He's supposed to be... You know, his mum would never have done that, Richie.
Well, he's supposed to be, obviously, look, we know it's a constitutional monarchy. People believe that these guys are there as a nod, a throwback to the olden times, and they don't have any power. You and I know differently. Can I ask you a question about something else? This is massive, I think.
Of course, yeah.
So Tedros Ghebreyesus was on telly this afternoon, right, from the World Health Organization. So they've announced a second vaccine for malaria. They're going to get 100 million doses of this made by next year. But the staggering thing, well, that's staggering enough, but they announced that the jab is a collaboration between Oxford, the people who made the AstraZeneca jab, which has been withdrawn because of all the problems, and the same company in India, Serum Limited or something like that, which will manufacture them. That's an incredible inversion, that, isn't it? So they rolled out Oxford's AstraZeneca jab. It caused strokes, heart attacks, amputations, major life-changing injuries. There are a lot of people taking Oxford AstraZeneca to court. And now we learn that the same people and the same crowd in India have got a malaria jab and four doses for children, Tony. What could possibly go wrong is my question.
Well, it amazes me that the Indians put up with this, really. I suppose it's because they're just a kind of puppet government of the West. And, I mean, the Chinese too. It really depends how you look at the world. I see it as a really a US-China conspiracy at the top. And the Indians are kind of being, see themselves as playing one off against the other, but actually they're working with both. And we've also had the appalling, several horrific decisions by the Indian government. One most important is probably to do with the Kashmir situation and the secession of Kashmir. Kashmir wants to secede from India because it's mainly Muslim. It should be really part of Pakistan, but the British Mountbatten left it like that deliberately to cause this horrible situation now. And then there's also the really quite evil use of the withdrawal of cash from India, because of course it's a society which is nowhere near as much electronic money as most parts of the world. And so they got rid of all these high value cash notes from the current people couldn't use them anymore.
That's right.
Just causes absolute mayhem, chaos. So they are just playing with their public like a farmer plays with sheep or goats, you know, messing around with people's heads in a really, really, I think, tyrannical fashion. So it doesn't surprise me that they are allowing these Western cartels. By the way, I was looking at something the other day, which I'll be using this Friday, by a guy called Matthias Rath. I don't know if you've come across him, the Rath Foundation.
Yes.
He's a German. He was really good during COVID. He was putting out lots of information about genuine, real cures for it and looking at some of the connections of the big pharmaceutical companies back to the Nazi era. And his contention is that most of what we're seeing now is German-led cartels that have taken over Europe and the EU. His book is called The Nazi Roots of the
Brussels EU. Brussels EU.
EU, that's right.
I've got it. It's brilliant.
I mean, so he's pointing out that the cartels in Europe, US, and they are, you know, slowly working their way in. Many of them are now in China too. These are the guys that are actually calling the shots. So in a way, what you've got is a sort of fascistic cartel system in Europe and America. This is just very, you know, very broad summary.
Yeah.
And then you've got Chinese Communist Party managed economy in China. Actually, there's not a lot of difference between the pair of them. And many of them, although that, you know, one might be colored blue and the other one red, they're really implementing exactly the same sorts of policies everywhere, whether it's to do with, you know, getting rid of cash, it's to do with, these microchip,
Neuralink
payments, all these things, none of which anyone has ever wanted or voted for. And what bothers me is that this whole control of money is biblical. You know, the idea that, you know, you look in the book of Revelation, there it is. It says no one will be able to buy and sell without, it doesn't say a microchip, right? It says without the mark of the beast, either in their right hand or in their forehead. Now, you know, many people, you could say the whole thing's just a fairy tale, but to me, it looks fascinating that you've got this genuine effort to bring about this a system of completely controlling people through whether they're allowed to buy anything to eat or drink or pay the rent or whatever, to something which is completely controlled externally. So you don't have you don't have a piece of gold, you don't have anything.
Nothing.
You just have a little chip which someone else owns and controls, that then you will completely control whether or not you're allowed to live or die.
And the Chinese are nearly there. And we love the Chinese.
We're getting there too. I mean, they still use cash in China. They still use a lot of cash in China. But, you know, both. In fact, when I was in Croatia recently, they hate it. They just don't like. They don't like electronic money. You look at them with a card and they go, "Oh, do we have to?" You know. So there's almost an innate thing, I think, in human beings, especially if they've just been through a massive war like they had in the Balkans, that let's just keep money. It's much, much better, you know, cash rather than this electronic rubbish.
Cash is king. I've got one final question for you, probably the most important question of the evening. Is it time for the Premier League to scrap VAR after the debacle between Liverpool and Spurs on Saturday evening tea? Do we need to get technology out of football? It's ruining the game. Do you care, T?
Well, I think I don't actually care really, but I tell you what,
I think the only
reason that VAR has arrived, I mean, I think it's you've got to have trustworthy referees and you've got to take all the bribery out of sport. I think there's a fantastic amount of bribery goes on, especially now there's so much money at stake in the Premier League, for example. I think there's often money gets, you know, brown envelopes change hands, probably not electronic money, in order to throw games.
I'd be surprised in the Premier League. It's gone on in Europe. But I'd be very surprised in the Premier League.
What I'm saying is, it's not just the Eurovision Song Contest. You know what I mean? It's all over the place.
And here's the absolute final question: are you moonlighting by washing windscreens on the M1 today to earn some extra cash? What the feck are you doing? This is the second time in three conversations that I'm trying to beat the traffic talking to you. Where are you?
I'm in Weston. There's no traffic around here.
Are you washing windscreens for a few quid? What's going on?
I'm actually out the back of the old Winter Gardens. There's no traffic anywhere.
Right, so you're gaslighting me now. I just heard an articulated lorry just go right up your backside. What's wrong with you?
I think I'd have known about it.
You didn't know about that.
There's a man going past around about 150 yards away.
In studio next time. We'll do it in the second hour. By the way, thisweek.org.uk, not the BCFM politics show, every Friday at 5 o'clock. My recommendation is worth its weight in gold, because I don't recommend anything. It's a brilliant show. Tony Gosling and a cast of excellent analysts. Every Friday.
Well, we have a row. Martin Summers and I, we've got this sort of, he's very much a Marxist socialist and I'm a Christian socialist. So we have a broad agreement about a mixed economy. That is to say, we need to have our infrastructure controlled by government and we need to be able to vote. And when we vote, that will determine what sort of infrastructure we get, you know, that sort of thing. And but on many of the other sort of more spiritual things, we are completely poles opposed. So poles apart. So
it makes for good listen.
It's a genuine discussion every week as Martin and I kind of scrabble to sort of control the narrative, if you want, of various stories that are coming through the pipeline.
I bore witness to it a couple of times. Thanks again for today. Time is up. Great to have you back, pal. We'll speak again in a few weeks. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks very much, Richie. God bless you.
As always, you too, pal. Thisweek.org.uk, and do check out Bilderberg.org, Tony's website, which is, there's an avalanche of information on there about the power brokers, Bilderberg secret societies. The program 5 o'clock every Friday. It's unmissable.